Hey, this is Mark Pattison back again with another episode of Finding Your Summit. This week, we have a really great guest on, another brilliant guy named Mark Bonchek. Mark comes from Boston, Massachusetts. We worked on a project together about 6 years ago here in LA. And he actually went to Harvard back in 1997, got a doctorate in digital strategy. So just a remarkable guy. He calls himself a chief epiphany officer, which was just a great title. If you can imagine how the landscape out there is changing with all the different social platforms. And so he really talks about a gravitational pull or trying to create one. And so many companies don't have it. So for all you budding entrepreneurs and marketeers out there, this is just a really valuable podcast to listen to and get the great tips from the experts that are out there, in this case, Mark Bonchek. And as always, we really appreciate when you go in, you rate and review on iTunes. You do raise in the ranks. We're trying to get more awareness out there on what we're trying to do and help people and overcome things. So go out there, rate, review, help us out, and all is very appreciated. All right, here we go. There's an old colleague of mine I worked with, I think, 5 years ago, at least five or six years ago, out here in California on a common project, Mark Bonchek, brilliant guy and very interesting. And I'm really excited about this conversation, about the direction it's going to go, talking about what he's up to with shift thinking and also kind of the trends going on with different companies. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, I love it. So let's tee this thing up. So you and I met originally a number of years ago, and I think you may have been doing a TED Talk or something, and the guy that I was doing a project for, Mike Singer, with Strategic Partners, saw you, was inspired, and brought you in to, I think, kind of change the mindset of many of the employees and the way you guys did business and the way that we were trying to start this new project. So can we kind of get into kind of what you're all about and kind of your business? And I think with that, it will help us kind of springboard into other conversations.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I have a company in practice I call Shift Thinking. And my title kind of gives some of it away. So I like to call myself, I'm a CEO, but I'm a chief epiphany officer.
Love that, by the way. I've never heard of it. You're original.
And I mean it as much of a reminder to myself as to other people, because I think of myself as being in the epiphany business, that my product in effect is that aha moment for people when they see the world in a new way. And my premise is that we're in a time of transformation and we can't just do new things. We have to think in new ways. And it used to be that you could just do new things and that was sufficient. But that was when the world changed incrementally, and now it's changing exponentially. And if we don't change how we think before we look at changing what we do, we're just going to get the same kind of results. Or you might get slightly better results, but it's not enough to be 10% better today. You have to be 10 times better.
So let's dig down into that. What does that mean? You're talking about exponential thinking. So if I'm walking down the street and somebody said, hey, you need to start exponentially thinking, you know, better, how does that relate to what I'm doing in my business?
Yeah. Well, what makes something exponential is that it's not just that it increases, but the rate of change increases. And the way to achieve that is by creating a network effect. And if you look at all of these companies today that we think of as being kind of the high flyers, so you know, whether it's Uber or Lyft or Airbnb or PayPal or Facebook or Twitter, all of them have tapped into some kind of a network effect. And that's why they don't just grow the 10%, they grow the 10 times. And if you look at the people that are most successful as well, you know, there's kind of an exponential aspect to the way in which they become successful. And the key to it, as I said, is that network effect. And normally we look at creating value through the things, you know, either ourselves, like what am I worth as an individual to a company, or what's my product worth to a consumer. And the key shift in thinking is to say it's not about the things, but the relationships between the things, the connections between the things. So let's just take Facebook, for example. So Facebook is basically a publishing platform. But instead of being like, you know, the New York Times or Fortune or Time or something like that, they didn't push the product, push the content out through a channel. They said, no, 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 we're going to connect people together and everyone's, we're going to turn everyone into a publisher. And so they activated that network effect where it's now people connecting with people instead of just writers to an audience. And everyone can put this into practice by looking at what are the things that you can be connecting together and not just what is the value of you and what you do.
So the first thing you're talking about was sort of push marketing, right? And where you've got just an outbound conversation going on with no feedback, right? There's no exchange. So do you call that then, you know, one to many, or do you call that many to many?
Well, yeah, I call that's a many to many. And when you start to so let's talk about marketing, but it applies in other areas too, but let's start marketing. So instead of just that one to one, one to many, push it out, there's no network effect. You know, you add one more viewer, one more subscriber, one more member of the audience, you're adding value incrementally, one more subscriber. But if you can connect those people together into a community of some kind, then they each can connect with everyone else. I mean, one of the best examples I see of this is Sephora and what they've done in creating these communities around beauty and makeup. And it's not just what they push out to people, but the way in which all of their customers share beauty tips with each other. And this is one of the reasons why I think Whole Foods failed and ended up getting acquired, was because they didn't tap into the many to many. They were really good about sending out newsletters and information about eating real food and eating healthy and so on, but they never connected their customers together. I mean, I think we all have kind of different quirks in our diet, you know, and I have certain things that I don't eat and I can't eat sesame and soy and so on. Well, I would have loved to have been able to go onto a Whole Foods online community of some kind and connect with other people who had the same kind of eating preferences or restraints that I did, and see what they're finding and what recipes they're doing and what foods they find are helpful. And they could have done a lot to activate that exponential effect of networking their customer base, but they didn't do that. And that's one of the reasons why I think they ended up not being able to stay viable as an independent company.
Yeah, I think they, to me at least, they went like halfway down the road and didn't do the full circle. So what they did do well is introduce, when you go to the produce department and you're picking through apples and oranges and whatnot, you know, there's typically a little story. This came from the local, you know, guy, blah, 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 blah. There's a little story. So it would connect that way, in that the fruits and vegetables and other food that you're getting is, you know, is organic or free of pesticides or whatever. But like you said, it's just a kind of an outbound message, and it's not connecting everybody else in the store.
That's right. And you can see this also with products. So it's not just with marketing. And look at what Nest has done with their thermostat and then now with their smoke detectors and their cameras. So it used to be that, you know, Honeywell or whoever made thermostats, and the thermostat just kind of sat there and each one was separate and it connected to your HVAC system, but it didn't connect to anything else. So Nest said, well, let's focus on the connectivity. So now the thermostats, you know, connect to your phone and they connect to each other. And like, I just installed the Nest smoke detectors, and it's a social network of things, I like to say, instead of Internet of Things. Those smoke detectors all talk to each other. So if there's a fire in one part of the house, the smoke detector on the other end says fire in the bedroom or fire in the entryway, because they're all talking to each other. So they're creating a many-to-many network of the little devices that are in your house.
So the name of this podcast, of course, is called Finding Your Summit. And so I'm really trying to take a kind of a wide angle view at not just things that are straight ahead, you know, talking about relationships and of course, mountain climbing, businesses, you know, it's a wide spectrum. So you must come into a lot of contact where companies hire you to come in and help with this shift thinking, create strategies and whatnot, where, you know, they've flatlined. I mean, it seems like that would be the obvious. That's the reason why they have you in there. But, you know, they've peaked, and, you know, what you're trying to do is help them overcome these different things to get to a new level.
Yeah, and it usually is that they're trying new things, but they're not getting the results they're looking for. And the first step, when you mentioned kind of Mike bringing me in or similar situation, is usually they'll hear me speak, and the message that they have to change how they think in order to change what they do resonates. And there's enough recognition to say, hey, the way we're thinking about this isn't working, but we don't know how to think about it. And that's most of where my work comes in, is both to help them see the constraint that their existing mental model is imposing on them, and then to figure out what the new model would be that would be more effective and would enable them to go to a higher summit. And then what's the story that enables them to align and energize everyone to, I call it the trapeze bar, to let go of the old trapeze bar and jump to the new one.
And that
and
must
that's
be
very much about thinking.
And so how difficult is that to create change? Because it's old patterns, right? And
yeah.
Behavior, and trying to think about it in just a whole new way is always the challenge. And then probably also, I would think that, you know, it's to permeate that throughout the organization.
It is, and it is hard, but it's also not as hard as you think. No pun intended. And the reason is that, you know, back to this trapeze metaphor. So let's say you're hanging from a trapeze bar and the rope is fraying and there's no net below, right? You know that it's going to give way at some point, but if there's nothing else to jump to, you're going to hang on as long as you can. That's just the rational thing to do. But if someone brings a new bar close enough to you, you'll gladly let go and go to the new bar. And so oftentimes what happens is people are resistant to change, but it's because they don't see there's any other way to go. And so they'll just keep doing what they're doing, even if they know that it's not working, because there's no alternative. And I find that there's too much emphasis on yelling at people to jump rather than designing the new bar and bringing it close enough for them to jump to.
So when you go into an organization and they have a certain business model, and the business model then for you is to get them to think in a way that rather than just do your same old marketing, push out emails and newsletters and whatnot, you know, post once a day on Facebook or Twitter, is really create that community to get it's almost like a sea of Davids, right? An army of Davids. It's actually the right terminology of getting people to be your advocate to create that springboard growth. I mean, right?
Yeah. And I kind of divide it into their four parts to what I do. One is what I call unlearning, which is getting people to see the existing mental model that's constraining them and to move to a new mental model. So that's kind of a foundation. And then you have to look and see, where is it that you need to apply this? Sometimes it's to us, ourselves as individuals, as leaders. Where are our mental models of our role as a leader? For example, I've been doing some work with in education and healthcare. And there you have doctors and teachers who, for their whole careers, have seen themselves as the expert. They're the ones who have the answers. That's their job. Patients and students come to them for the answer. But increasingly, because of technology and change, you know, people don't expect them to have all the answers. You know, increasingly with artificial intelligence, the computer's going to have the answer. Or with flipped classrooms, it's different, and people are getting their information online. They don't expect the teacher to have the answer. So they have a mental model of their role that needs to get changed. So it can be who they are as leaders, but it can also be with respect to their strategy, as you mentioned, their business model. You know, are we about a product and service, or are we about a platform and network that enables others to create value? It could be their marketing, as you mentioned just now, about shifting from an audience to a community. Or it could be in their organization, and how do they move from a more hierarchical, top-down kind of cascade the command and control directives from the top into more of a collaborative, networked, agile organization. That's a different mental model of organization. So my first step when I go in is always kind of the triage to say, where is the binding thinking? Is it about people's sense of themselves as leaders? Is it about the way that they create value and organize their business model? Is it about how they engage their customers? Or is it about how they organize their employees and partners?
That's amazing. It's amazing from when that's a lot, I guess. That's the reason why I'm saying it's amazing. It's amazing to go in and a company that, you know, clearly knows there's a need but doesn't know exactly. So maybe it's just sometimes you're too far in it. The old adage about sometimes you can't see the trees in the forest. And maybe that's it. Is there a common thread that you find when you go into these different companies? I mean, is there a common problem that comes up, or does it just equally share in those four different buckets you just talked about?
I think that the one that people are the most aware of, I'm finding, is on the marketing side, just because it's really clear if customers are responding to you or not. You know that you have a growth problem or retention problem. The feedback is very clear with customers today who aren't responding to the usual kinds of engagement strategies. You know, white papers don't work in B2B, and advertising is not working the way it used to. People are looking online. So I think the presenting problem is very much in the marketing area right now. I think that, and you can kind of keep going with a traditional organizational model, and you can keep going with your business model, although those are the ones that people are going to have to contend with next. I mean, there really is I love the idea of kind of finding your summit, and there's finding your summit as an individual, and there's finding your summit as a company. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what's really disorienting to people is that it's hard enough to get to the summit, and then people are finding, like, wow, the mountain moved. You know, we're still trying to get to this summit, but now actually the game is over there on that mountain range. Uh-oh, what do we do now?
Which is kind of what you were talking about in the opening, where the landscape is changing more than ever in the history of the world.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, did the New York Times ever thought that they'd be competing with Facebook for where people get news?
Yeah.
That's a whole different mountain range, you know? And, did Honeywell or whoever the thermostat manufacturers are, did they think they'd be competing with Google?
Yeah. So how does that work, you know, in terms of, what's your advice in terms of trying to stay in front of this changing climate?
Well, I think the first thing is you have to learn how to kind of peel things back. You know, there's so much on the surface now. I mean, we're gonna forget about kind of what's going on in the political arena, although that's an interesting one too in terms of mental models. But even just in business, it's really easy to have kind of like these high growth companies are called unicorns.
Yep.
You could kind of have unicorn envy. You know, if you're a bank, you look at PayPal, or if you're in publishing, you look at Facebook, or you look at Salesforce, if you're in technology, any of these companies. And it's very tempting to think, oh, well, we need to do what they do. And where I always start is to say, no, don't start there. Figure out how they think. You know, people are good at this around investing. You know, Warren Buffett's annual letter is scoured for people to understand how he thinks about investing. And I would say the same thing like with Jeff Bezos. You know, it is not a matter of, wait, how do we build a website like Amazon's? But if you go and you read Bezos's annual letters, you can start to see how he thinks. I'll give you an example. Everything they do is around this mission of being the world's most customer-centric company. Every company today has to be thinking about what their mission is and really organizing around that. But then if you look at not only how they think, but what they measure, because that determines really what you're going to do, they have 500 KPIs, key performance indicators at Amazon that they track and how they manage their business. 80% of those are related to the customer. And I would challenge any company to look at what they measure. And I would bet that in most companies, they're measuring 80% are internal and 20% are external. Mm. And Amazon, it's flipped the other way around. So you really have to look at who do you emulate? How do they think? And then are you making investments and measuring the things that line up with the mission that you've set out for your business?
Yeah, I think it's a great example of all the things you're talking about, creating communities, people talking about it, doing reviews, being customer-centric, things showing up, you know, with the Prime, introduction of the Prime, where things show up the next day or a day after. And there's just so much customer satisfaction that people want to evangelize about how great Amazon, and now Amazon is a position to essentially take over so many different sectors because they're all about where can we go next.
That's right.
So,
and they didn't box themselves in. If you look at that kind of bigger, they set themselves up for the highest summit possible. I mean, some people don't know like the logo and the name. So, you know, Amazon is the world's biggest river. So, you know, he had that vision of it being everything. He knew he was just going to start with books. If you look at the logo, the smile connects the A to the Z. And that was the idea, that they're going to have everything from A to Z. So it was there from the beginning.
Yeah, that's great. You know, they're a Seattle company. I've had some buddies who invested early in and they could see the vision. I've talked to them about it. And they just said, you know, the guy was just so unique in the way he saw the world. This is way back pre-internet when he was selling books out of his garage. But the vision was always big. Another Seattle company, I'm a Seattle guy. So another Seattle company that I worked with for a long time is Starbucks. And why don't you tell us a little bit more about Starbucks? I know you've studied them in the past, but why their whole, the way they think, customer-centric, bringing people together, why that worked?
Well, it's interesting. I have a slightly different view on Starbucks. So I have a view of why it works and why it doesn't work. So why it works is because they have a mission that's bigger than the product. And it's this insight that, in terms of how they think, is they don't think of themselves as a coffee company. They think of themselves as a third place company, which was Howard Schultz's original insight. And this idea of third place is that successful communities have a third place between home and work. And when he went to Europe many years ago, he saw that the cultures there had a third place and there was a beverage of some kind that was the currency of that third place. So in England, it's the pub. In Germany, the beer garden. In France and Italy, it's the cafe or the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to bring that to America. And so Starbucks was created as the third place between home and work, with coffee as the currency. And it grew through that, as well as empowering baristas with good healthcare and so forth. And what it's interesting, if you know the book Onward that Howard Schultz wrote, he describes how when he stepped away from managing the business, it started to suffer. And then he came back in and then they started growing again. And it's largely because they started to think of the business as a coffee company again. And so their metrics were about how many cups of coffee were they selling, not how successful were they at creating a third place where people wanted to be there. And then they ended up drinking the coffee as a result of being there. So it's a good example of what they did right, which was understanding that there was a shared purpose beyond the product and really differentiating the experience around it. So that's the what worked. I have a view of what doesn't work or what's limiting them, which is they have a view. Their mission, by the way, is to inspire the human spirit, one cup, one person, one neighborhood at a time. And it's great, except they do something that I call hoarding their purpose, which is they believe that only they, I believe this, they believe that only they get to inspire the human spirit. or I like to say, who gets to wear the t-shirt with your mission on it? In their case, only the baristas get to wear the t-shirt, or in this case, the apron. You don't get to inspire the human spirit. They do. And that's why you go to Starbucks. And so it caps the ability of creating a many-to-many. I mean, imagine a Starbucks online community of people sharing stories and doing things of how to inspire the human spirit. I mean, you're an example of that in what you're doing with Finding Your Summit. You're inspiring the human spirit. Imagine if there was a platform that Starbucks created that was featuring your podcasts, and you were then connecting to Starbucks as a third place for inspiration. But they don't do that. So it's a real missed opportunity in my book.
Well, I think we need to make that happen. That would be fun. No, you're right. You're right. You know, it's a, certainly people go there, they collaborate, people, you know, use the Starbucks as their office and whatnot. But again, there's just such a great opportunity to share stories and share other things that they're probably missing out on right now that really springboard them further than where they are today.
And here's an example of you can reveal where the mental model is, because coffee is their currency, and they've had a very successful mobile app, works great. But if I want to send you a cup of coffee, I have to send you like an e-gift certificate for a certain amount of money that you then redeem towards the coffee, which just takes the whole fun out of it. Mm-hmm. Instead of being able to just say, hey, do you have the Starbucks app? Here, let me send you coffee today. And then you'd send it back to me tomorrow, and we'd be, quote, inspiring the human spirit in each other through coffee. But they don't do that, which reveals the mental model that only the baristas get to do it.
Yeah, no, it takes away the interactive playfulness, right?
So that's the many to many.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you know, they've obviously they've got millions and millions around the world of loyal Starbucks followers. I mean, that'd be so easy to tap into.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's so. So let's go back to 1997, and I believe you went to or coming out, either went into or coming out of Harvard.
Yep, and I graduated. I finished my PhD in 97.
Yeah, so you're thinking about things in this whole digital revolution. You know, you pretty much you're probably much more forward thinking than anybody else around, right? I mean, so the question is, You know, why were you thinking about things in this way, and why could you kind of see the future when so many others didn't?
Well, some of it was I had the luxury of being in graduate school where I could kind of have time to think. There's just like, even more so today. Usually you just don't have time to think. So that was part of it. Some of it was also kind of stumbled down a pathway of looking at networks and understanding networks. And I just made that connection that said, I wanted to understand how the internet was going to change society. And I was looking at political participation. And I don't even remember, you know, that's what an epiphany is. You know, you kind of don't have it and then you have it. And I just, at some point was looking at, kind of Marshall McLuhan's work on the medium as the message. And it basically, he said, like, it's not the content of a medium, it's the nature of the medium itself. So I was like, okay, if I want to understand what the internet's going to do, and this is really early. I mean, don't forget, you know, Yahoo had barely started. There was no Google, and Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook was still in grade school. So there was none of this social networking, anything. Yeah. Barely had email and web pages. So I remember thinking, okay, well, I need to understand what's the internet, the nature of the internet as a medium. And it grew out of, most people don't know this, but it grew out as a computer network that was designed to be resilient in the face of a nuclear attack, so that it would kind of dynamically reroute the data if something got taken out, because the existing systems were really brittle that way. And so you had to understand it as a network. And that was really what started me down the path, was to say, okay, it is not about it being digital. It's not about it being the internet. It's about what happens when we move to networks and many-to-many communication. And that was fundamentally different. The last time we had a change of that kind was 400 years ago when Gutenberg invented the printing press. So once you start to look at the changes that the printing press created compared to what the internet would do, you start to realize that, man, this is going to change everything.
As you look over your career, is there a couple, or maybe it's one shining star, either a company that you worked with and helped, or just another one that you've admired from afar that check all the boxes in terms of doing all the strategies that you speak about, really engaging the whole community, sharing back and forth, interactive, and, you know, or soaring? Who would that be?
You know, I haven't seen one yet. I would say that the company that I think gets it the most in terms of the customer side of things, I don't know about internally what it is to work there, but I can say externally, I think Sephora is doing this better than anyone, largely credit to Julie Bornstein's original work there. She had started Nordstrom.com and then went to Sephora. Now she's at Stitch Fix, but really put the DNA in place of understanding that it's about education and connection and creating currencies for their community and going beyond just what you sell into what I call the brand orbit, the ongoing relationship beyond the individual transaction. I think they do it as well as anybody I've seen. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I actually see companies that get it and then take a step backwards. Nike, I think, got this really well with what they were doing with the Nike Plus running app. And then on the latest incarnation, they stripped out a lot of the community features because they started to go towards a more transactional loyalty model. So just because you get there doesn't mean you stay there.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that. I know that the that wristband and everything else, a lot of people were touting it. They loved it. You know, hey, look, I ran 2 miles a day or I walked X amount of steps. And that seemed to be creating a conversation. And then they could tie in other buddies, you know, invite five friends and
right.
Sort of a competition of who walked the furthest or ran the furthest or did the most exercise of the day. Very interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we're really early on in all of this and there are little bits. But the good news for people is that there's a lot of opportunity. And the companies that do make the transition are the ones that are going to really succeed. And all of this applies to individuals as well in terms of a personal brand. I'm working with one of the stars of the show Hamilton, you know, the top musical on Broadway now, about her personal brand. So Mandy Gonzalez, and she's got this great mission around being fearless and inspiring other people to be fearless. And instead of just a typical fan community, which is kind of about her, this is really a shared purpose of helping people be fearless in their lives with a notion of finding your fearless squad. So you can find it on hashtag fearless squad. And it's all about people using social media to support each other to fulfill their dreams. And it's taking off exponentially. So it absolutely applies at any level in any industry, in any field.
Yeah, I just got done reading this book called The Morning Miracle by Hal Elrod. And in it, it's really about changing behavior for people who want to change their life. And it could be, you know, a weight issue. It could be a relationship. It could be your business, whatever. But really starting before 8 a.m. in the morning, accomplishing all these different things of visualization and goal setting and exercise and things like that, that all encompass, you know, in 1 hour. And one of the things that he's done very successfully has created this community of where other like-minded people who want to change their mindset and their ways and change their habit in terms of being more productive and everything else, they've gone into Facebook, created these different communities. And so now people are within there sharing their stories and encouragement and inspiring others to stay committed to this new morning routine. And so, you know, it's just another small example of what you just mentioned.
Absolutely. If you want to change a habit or a behavior, do it with other people. I mean, all the data shows you're far more likely to exercise or lose the weight or whatever it's going to be, quit smoking, if you're doing it with other people.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. So, Mark, where can people find you?
They can find me. My website is www.shift.to, shift.to. My Twitter is at Mark Bonchek, B-O-N-C-H-E-K. And I also write a regular column on Harvard Business Review. So you can look for me there too.
That's great. And, you know, from my standpoint, my endorsement from you, having worked with you, you're brilliant and you think differently and it's really creative to be around. And so any of those out there looking to have some sort of organizational change to what they're doing and understand what Mark's talking about, then I'd really encourage you to reach out to him. Great guy. Appreciate the interview, Mark. It's been an absolute treat.
Oh, for me too. Thank you, Mark. And I love what you're doing and helping people find their summit. There's nothing more important than that. So it's been a pleasure to be part of this. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in to the podcast this week. We had another great guest, and it is so awesome to continually have these different people on, talk about their different adversity, how they've overcome that, and what they've done to affect change in their life to become very successful. So really appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, we love the rating and reviews that you guys do on iTunes. If you haven't done that, please go do that. It really helps us in terms of increasing our visibility within iTunes. Anyways, it's just fun to share the love and what these different stories, these different people are all about. So make sure you tune in next week. We appreciate it. And that's it. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.